Hello, reader. I'm Alex.
And I'm Kelly.
And this is
the Lit Joy Podcast.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Lit Joy Special Edition of Heartless by Marissa Meyer.
Very excited.
I know. So we're interviewing the author and we're promoting our special edition. This is a standalone book. It is the backstory of the Queen of Hearts, essentially.
Before she was the Queen of Hearts.
Yes. Before she was the villain of Alice in Wonderland, which is Marissa's genius. This is a deluxe edition, so it is signed. It is annotated. Ooh.
I've all checked that out.
beautiful cover art, beautiful interactive elements on the cover, slip case, end pages, tip-in artwork. It's beautiful edges. We went all out on this one.
Yeah. It's deluxe.
Yes, deluxe. It's
gorgeous.
And it's perfect for such a lovey time of year. So that is releasing it. Public access is March 25th. And then Lunacorns get it a day early on March 24th. So make sure to mark your calendars or become a loony so that you get it early access.
Marissa Meyer is the host of the Happy Writer podcast and the New York Times bestselling author of the Lunar Chronicles, the Renegades trilogy, Heartless, the Wires and Nerves graphic novels, Instant Karma, Gilded and Cursed. She lives in Tacoma, Washington with her husband and twin daughters.
We can jump right into it. So first of all, thank you for taking time
to
chat with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yes. And I just have to say, one of the first books that Kelly ever recommended to me was the Cinder series.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really close friends with Kelly, but I had just barely joined her book club. And she was like, you have to read these sci-fi fairy tale retellings. And so that was kind of one of the first introductions into book club that I had is reading those books. And so just obviously loved them, consumed them all. And I think that the final two books had not come out. But it's very surreal moment to be working with you this year and to be doing a podcast with you. So I'm very excited.
Well, thank you. And thanks, Kelly, for spreading the word. I appreciate it.
I was just thinking same thing. Like, I think the first time I was introduced to you, I think you had just come out with Cinder and you were speaking at the King's English here in Utah.
Oh, so long ago.
It was a while ago.
King's English.
Well, it was at the art gallery next door. But
Do you remember that? Yeah.
And that's where I was introduced to you and the whole series and everything. And that's where I first learned about, the series that you love. Is it like an anime series?
Sailor Moon.
I was like way off. Sailor Moon. That's right. I was like, what's that? And I remember learning about you talked a lot about that and how it's influenced you. And it was so fun. It was really fun. I wish that, you know, before COVID, we had more authors that were able to fly into town and be able to hear them on their book tours and things like that. But I was grateful I had the opportunity to meet so many incredible authors and especially because I don't know, was that your debut novel?
Cinder was my debut. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, and it's funny because I'm leaving on book tour here in a few days. And it's six stops. And I was, my husband's aunt was just visiting this morning and she was like, oh, I couldn't do it. How can you get on an airplane every day for six straight days? That sounds so hectic and chaotic. And for me, this is like, I don't know, my 20th book tour. And back in my first few books, book tours were like 3 or 4 weeks long instead of just 1 week long. So to me, I'm like, oh, it feels like a breeze. No big deal. 6 days. I'll be back before you know it.
Yes. Absolutely. On book tours, do you usually go on tour with every book or did you need to pause during, did you have a pause with COVID or book tours, like usually every single release you go out on tour?
Yeah, no, I do go out on tour with every release, but we did pause during COVID. So my book Instant Karma was my COVID book. And then we did just like a slew of virtual events, which... I mean, we were all doing what we could. It was the option available to us, but oh, not the same. I'm excited to be back and seeing people face to face.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
I'm like, I'm going to rewind a little bit.
Yes.
And I want to ask this first question because I just love backstory all the time. I want to hear your backstory about how you came into being an author and your whole journey.
Yeah. Okay. So I am one of the authors that I knew I wanted to do this from the time that I was really little. I loved books. I was an avid reader pretty much since before I can remember. And I don't know, like, I don't have a clear memory of like the moment when it became clear to me that books were created by people and this was a job and you can actually get paid to write things. But at some point I made that connection. And I think that that's pretty much, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. I had a big imagination. I was always making up stories. Even as a little kid, I would have my mom write up the stories that I was coming up with for me. So that was just kind of something that I felt really strongly about, my whole life. And then as a teenager, I got really, really into Sailor Moon, as you already mentioned. And I joined the fandom and I started writing fan fiction. And that was the first time that I was brave enough to take the stories that I was writing and actually share them with other people and started getting feedback. And a lot of people responded really well to them. And so I was very encouraged by this wonderful community. And that inspired me to one, write like a ton of fan fiction. But then after a few years of that, I also started to think, well, maybe I could try to write a novel and actually get published. So I started trying to write a novel when I was 16. And for 10 years, I kept trying and kept trying and kept trying. And then when I was 26, I had the idea for Cinder. And that was the first book that I felt strongly enough that the idea is it's commercial, it's fun. I'm just in love with the concept myself. And I really was motivated to try to write it and try to get it published. And then it, of course, did go on to become my debut novel.
Were you able to be picked up fairly quickly, or did you feel like it took a little while?
Yeah, for me, the hard part was in writing a book that was worth publishing. And so it took, I mean, like I said, I've been writing all my life. And then Cinder, from start to finish, was a 2-year-long process. But once I did start seeking out publication, it actually did go pretty quick for me. I submitted it to, 15 maybe literary agents. And I did receive a number of rejections, but I ended up getting a yes from my agent, who was actually the very first agent that I had sent it to. So it was like, why did I even bother with anybody else? And then she and I worked on the manuscript, not for very long, maybe a couple of weeks, just some minor revisions. And she took it out to publishers on a Friday, and we had an offer for the series on Monday. So that part went really fast.
Very cool. Congratulations about that debut experience. That's very cool.
It was quite magical. It was not what I was expecting. I knew rejection is a part of the process, and this is a really tough business and very competitive. So I was prepared for the long haul, and it's just not what happened this time.
Yeah. Well, you got the long haul in the writing.
Yeah, there was a lot of practicing beforehand.
Absolutely. I am curious to know, I think the biggest theme in your writing, and I'm kind of jumping ahead on questions, but, you have such a strong voice with retellings. And that's kind of where your genius is in a lot of your writing, is taking this somewhat familiar fairy tale or idea and creating this totally new world and experience around it. And so I want to know a little bit more about Cinder as like your jumping off point for these retellings, and kind of how you found your writing voice in those retellings, and if you feel like that's kind of your thing. Or if it just kind of you happened upon it?
A little of both. I've loved fairy tales since I was a little girl. I loved Disney, loved Grimm and Perrault and Hans Christian Andersen. And I, from the young age, people started giving me books of fairy tales and folk tales. So it's kind of always been something that I've really been into and curious about. And I love doing retellings. I think that's a really fun challenge, to take a story that most readers are already going to be familiar with and to give them the same and something that they're like, oh, I love this story. I remember this story from my childhood. I, you know, am excited to be seeing it retold. And yet also flip it on its head so that readers feel like, oh, but I've never read this story before. And I like that. I like trying to balance those two things and to find ways to make it familiar and yet completely unexpected. And that's part of the writing process that I just really enjoy. That said, as a reader, I'm into lots of different genres. And so kind of the path of my career so far has been I'll write a retelling or two, and then I go and write an action superhero series. And then I write some more retellings, and then I go and write some rom-coms. And now we're back to retellings, and I've just finished up a murder mystery. So I kind of always go back to retellings, but I have lots of other genres I'm excited about, too.
Mm.
Yeah.
Love that. It's a good mix.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I just love retellings too, because you're right. It's such a great way to tap into the nostalgia of something that people already love and are drawn to. And then you're all, but just you wait.
And I just love that. I hope people feel that way, that they're getting something new.
I remember reading Heartless the first time. I felt like that. I was just like I felt mind blown because it was such a fun retelling to get the backstory on someone that we really hadn't with the Queen of Hearts.
Yes. And I, like to Kelly's point on that, I do feel like Fairest was my favorite in Cinder. And then yes. I also loved Heartless. And I think that the villain backstory in both of those was just, oh, it was so good. Mm. It was.
I was like, oh, yeah, Ferris.
Really? Yes. Yeah. Just like really captured something that I think in fairy tales, it's the villains sometimes can be a bit one dimensional. Like they're evil because they're an archetype and then that's really all you get. And there might be some envy or jealousy or things there, but it was just having those villains and their moments in your writing was really, really fun to read.
Thank you. Thank you. I love writing villain stories. There's something about playing with that, the in between the gray areas, the parts of us that, I mean, most of us feel compelled, generally speaking, to do well, to try our best, to, you know, be a good part of society, to help others, be generous, kind, etc. But I think we also all have these moments of we're like, well, I would really like to be selfish right now, or I'd really like to be greedy. Or, I mean, you can understand, you can relate to those parts of us that don't always want to be so good all the time. And so I like playing with that. Two very different villain stories, of course, in Heartless. I loved getting to start with Kath, who is a good character, who wants to do her best, who wants to make other people happy, and watching that descent for her into someone who is wicked and heartless, literally heartless, was really fun to play with. Alternatively, Lavanna in Fairest, she kind of starts out bad already, but we get to see why and how and the situation around her that kind of made her who she was. And so that's not quite as relatable, I think, or at least I wasn't trying to get people to like really feel like, oh, she's just trying to do what she thinks is best and, you know, just goes about it the wrong way. No, we recognize that she's doing really horrible things. But I hope that in reading the book, readers can start to see like, oh, but I get it. I get why she's doing these things.
Absolutely. Yes, like the psychology behind it is just so interesting.
I know. It's like tapping into something so human. Is that no one is good or bad or, you know, all evil. We all have potential for both. And I think that's what draws me to those stories so much, the ones about the bad guys. You know, the villains in these books is because we all have the potential to be one in someone's story. And to witness like the backstory of how they got to that point can be so human sometimes where you relate to it. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, oh, like,
yeah,
in another life, that could be me. Who knows?
I think that's a really good point. Like in another life, or even sometimes if how far away are we really from becoming the villain in someone else's story? Like is it one bad decision away? Is it one circumstance outside of our control that would have us like turning into other people?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I think those are really interesting questions to play with.
Yeah, me too. I was thinking about some of the stories that I really enjoy, and they play with that a lot. Mm-hmm. Because, and that's where I think my, you know, we both have psych degrees and our little brains immediately catch on to that. Not little brains, our brains kick up. And,
our average size brains.
I didn't mean little brains. I was like, oh, where that came from. We just get so, our curiosity so piqued when it comes to the human experience and human behavior and stories. And that's, I think, why I'm so pulled to those ones, particular of yours, is you play with that so much. And Emma, chef's kiss. Great job.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
I kind of have a follow-up question on that. Yeah. I'm curious to know how you develop a character. Specifically, so we can talk about your writing process, which I think is just always interesting to hear how different authors approach writing and their daily schedule of writing, et cetera. But I am curious to know, kind of an expansion on that question is, how do you come to meet a character and how do you develop them? And is it like as you're writing the story, or do they come kind of with this personality in the beginning, or yeah, just that process?
Yeah, it does vary. Once in a while, you get a character that just appears fully formed and they know who they are and you hear their voice so clearly from page one. And that is magic when it happens. And I wish that it would happen every time, but it doesn't. That's the exception to the rule. For me, I tend to be fairly exploratory. So at the start of a process, I like to know a few basic things about my characters, some of their backstory. If we're looking at a protagonist, I try to give every protagonist something relatable that readers are going to respond to. I try to give every protagonist something kind of cool or interesting about them, something that I admire or that I am impressed by. And then I also try to give every protagonist a flaw and something that will make them not perfect, because perfect people are not interesting and also not believable. So every character has a flaw. And then I also ask myself, okay, what is their biggest fear? And I really try to dig deep into figuring out what their fears are, because a lot of times that will become a really important moment in the plot when the character has to face this fear. And sometimes they have to face it multiple times, and maybe they fail or they get scared, they run away, whatever it is. And then overcoming that fear is usually a big part of the character arc eventually. So I try to know those kind of basic things to get started. And then I start writing and I learn a ton about my characters as I'm actually writing and seeing what they do and how they react to situations and starting to hear their voice and figuring out what do they care about, who do they love, what's their sense of humor. And for me, it's often not until the second or even third draft of a book when they really come into focus. Like, it's a lot of writing the book and revising the book and getting to know them little by little.
Mm-hmm. Do you get to... I guess the question I have is, how do you get to the end of the book? So are you writing a first draft that's like 30,000 words? It's like very much just an outline draft, and then you go back and flesh it out more? Or do you flesh it out chapter by chapter? How does that process go?
I start with an outline, not a super in-depth outline. It's usually scene by scene. Sometimes even just a sentence or two per scene, just to give me an idea of here's the important thing that has to happen in every chapter. And then I start writing. I try to draft very quickly. I come from the school of NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month,
yes,
in which you try to tackle an entire draft in 1 month. I don't do that for every book. I wish that I could, but these days I try to write a book in less than 3 months to get through that first draft. And for me, the magic of a book usually doesn't happen until revisions. So for that first draft, I'm not trying to make anything good or pretty or even like make that much sense. I know that it won't in a lot of times. I'm just trying to figure out what is this story about, trying to find some of those nuggets of gold, the little moments that you surprised you, because even though I have an outline, there's always moments that surprise me. And get to the end. And then once I have the full manuscript, then I can take a step back and ask myself, okay, what's working? What's not working? What can I do better? And then in my revisions is when I really start to dig a lot deeper into it.
Yeah. Do you do revisions like with a writing group, or do you usually do it kind of on your own? Is it, or is it like a combination of both?
I do it totally on my own. I try not to show the book to anyone until I feel like I've done the best that I can do. Because I don't want to waste anybody's time with them giving me feedback on things that I already know need to be fixed. So mm-hmm. I fix everything that I can. I make it as good as I can. And then I show it to my editor, my agent, and I have one beta reader that reads it to figure out, okay, what am I still missing? What's still not working?
Mm. Nice. Interesting. While we're talking about like your writing process and things like that, because I'm not a writer, but if I was, as you were explaining your process, I'm like, I feel like that's how I would write actually, is just get the bones down, like get your puzzle pieces kind of situated. And then it sounds like you really like cinch it all in as you revise. I'm like, that feels less overwhelming to me. Mm-hmm. When people are just like, write a book, you know, I'm like, so many details. So I'm like, that makes a lot of sense to my brain if mm-hmm. I was gonna ever tackle that. But so in the writing process, do you feel like you're pretty structured? Like you're not, you know, like a pantser as it's
Yeah, no, I always have an outline. And even when the story veers away from the outline, which it does occasionally, then I will usually pause writing and go back and rework the outline before I continue. And for me, it's a comfort thing. A lot of writers, you know, who are not outliners, they enjoy the not knowing. They enjoy the experience of figuring out the story and kind of having the story surprise them. For me, the idea of not knowing what's going to happen just gives me major anxiety. Exactly. And I would just stare at a computer screen and like, how can I possibly write if I don't know what I'm supposed to be writing and what's supposed to be happening next? So I like the comfort of having at least an idea of where the story is heading and how I'm going to get there. And then as I'm going, if little things crop up that I wasn't expecting, or, you know, little surprises, a new character shows up, turns out to be really fun and interesting, then I can go with it. So there's still a lot of newness and a lot of novelty in the writing process. But I do like knowing, okay, I can't go too far off track because I do have a plan.
Yeah. I may have like one or two more questions on your writing process, because I'm sure this comes up a lot, you know, at events or just in other interviews, but I'm like, I just love the questions of just being able to visualize what an author's situation is like for them to write. Like, what is your perfect like writing conditions? And do you have like a space in your home where you're like, this is where I write, these are the foods, the drinks, like what's that whole look, you know, experience look like?
Yeah. I mean, we're here, I'm in my office. You can't see them, but I have bookshelves on either side of me right now. And then I have my glass of sparkling water, and that's
fancy.
That's about it. I usually have socks on. If it's cold, I'll have my fingerless gloves because it gets really cold in this office for some reason. But that's pretty much it. I would say that's standard. This is where I do most of my writing these days. Mm. But like, if we're thinking ideal scenario, like I'd love to be, I don't know, in a cabana in Hawaii or something, like a mountain lodge overlooking like snowscape mountains with a fire in the fireplace and like a cup of hot cocoa. Like there's an ideal vision for what writing looks like. But usually it happens right here.
Yeah. We've definitely talked to authors who they're like, I literally have to travel to write.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
So it is always interesting.
Like the writing processes are so varied with authors, which is just shows that there's as many different authors as there are different books. Like what they need is different places. So some of them, it's like literally only one spot. And I remember specifically, actually, Stephen King came to Utah a few years ago, and we were able to go to his book signing. And he talked about how he got famous and successful and bought a house with a huge office and a huge desk, and he hated it. And so he actually went back to like his little cabin, like this little like kind of shack on his property that he goes into this dark room, and like that's where he writes still.
That makes sense.
Because he's like, yeah. I just
can see that. You can really visualize that.
Yeah, like especially in his writing, I'm all, how many people were murdered in his shack, right? Like, like metaphorically.
Yeah. Metaphorically. No, I try to go on a couple, at least two writing retreats every year. I have a group of writer friends, and sometimes we just like rent an Airbnb in our backyard. And sometimes we've gone to Hawaii. We did a cruise to Alaska, a writing retreat cruise. Ooh, so cool. Sometimes we mix it up, but there is, for me, I'm absolutely the most productive when I am on a writing retreat. But that's like becomes a question. Well, is it because it's a different area that's more inspiring, or is it just the fact that I'm away from my kids and I don't have to cook myself dinner? Like, there's a lot of that too.
Yeah,
that totally makes sense. Well, I want to pivot into talking a little bit more about your book specifically. So we did write down the question asking if Prudence and Jude's magical abilities or their story was inspired by a fairy tale. But it sounds like you took a deviation from fairy tales. So tell us a little bit more about that story and how you were inspired there with Instant Karma.
Yeah, sure. So Instant Karma was my first rom-com, my first romantic comedy. And it was not inspired by fairy tales. I can trace back to when I was 16. I had the initial idea for Instant Karma, and that was because I'd just gotten my driver's license, and I was a really, really nervous driver. I didn't want to get my driver's license. My parents kind of forced me to because they were tired of driving me around.
No, wait, Did you grow up in Washington then?
I did.
Okay, so I grew up in Auburn, Washington, which is just right by Tacoma. So you're driving in, it can be a little bit of an intimidating, confusing place to drive because it's like you can't tell where you're going. There's just trees everywhere.
Yeah, and this story, I was actually on I-5, which you must know then, is like there's stretches of I-5 that are like 7 lanes long. It's this huge freeway. And I would always stay on the far right and probably was going slower than I should have because, again, I was very nervous. But one day I'm out and I'm driving and I'm scared. And this person comes, you know, speeding up behind me and doesn't like that I'm going so slow. And so now he's, you know, right on my tailgate. And he, I don't know, could have been a she. I don't know who it was. But they start, you know, honking their horn. And at one point they like zipped around me and then cut me off to take this the exit, and it scared the living daylights out of me. And I remember at that moment thinking, I wish that I could just snap my fingers and they would blow a tire because I felt like they clearly deserve that to happen to them. But then immediately I thought, but if that worked and I did it and they got a blown tire, what are the chances that they would spin out of control and crash into someone else and probably like someone would die or have some horrible accident and it would clearly be all my fault? And so that just kind of stuck with me. And then over the years, I would just have these little fantasies when someone did something that ticked me off, whether, you know, someone cuts in line or someone, you know, takes the last cookie at the buffet or like whatever it was. I would just have these like little bitter, resentful moments. Like I could just snap my fingers and you would get what's coming to you. And over time that started to grow into this idea of this girl that actually gets this power. And then of course I'm a huge, huge Beatles fan and I love the song Instant Karma by John Lennon. So then that kind of started to tie in with it. And at some point I started to think it'd be really fun to do a series of these, each one inspired by a different Beatles song. So we've got John Lennon with A Little Luck, which is coming out next week. I don't know when this is going live, but yay. that is inspired by a Paul McCartney song. And right now those are the only two, but I do have some ideas for a Ringo and or a George book. So maybe something.
That's cool.
Those are so charming, especially in the rom-com genre. Yeah. I feel like doing those kind of cheeky title series kind of a thing is just, it's perfect for that readership too. And so I'm like, I'm very excited for the next one. And by the time this episode comes out, it will have released.
Yeah.
And so we'll make sure it's in the show notes.
Show the cover.
Yes.
Show it.
Beautiful. Yes. Yay. Do you hug your books when you get them?
I do. Are you kidding? It's Cheryl's such an exciting moment. You work on it for so long. And then to see it in physical book form with like the jacket and like it never gets old. It's so cool, so fulfilling to see it turn into a real book.
Well, do you have a book or a series that are your favorites that you have created? I know that's hard. I'm like, pick your favorite child.
Right. Yeah, I don't. I really don't. Every book has its own challenges. And so by the end of the writing process, you go through periods of every book where you doubt the book, where you hate the book, where you're convinced that you're doing a terrible job and you shouldn't have chosen to write this one in the first place. And then to come out on the other side and end up with a book that you're actually quite proud of and quite pleased with, is very special. And so I'm really proud of all of my books and really thrilled with them. So no, I don't have a favorite. I do think that Instant Karma is probably the most fun that I ever had writing any of my books. So like that's something.
Yeah, that is something.
Yeah. I have a 2-part question.
Yes, but go for it.
Okay. So on that same line of just talking about the genres that you've written, because you started out with like fantasy retellings and
switched over. Sci-fi as well. A little bit. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, sci-fi. And then you've kind of switched over to these rom-coms. And I was curious if was it a hard adjustment to switch genres in writing differently that way? And my 2-part question is, what other genres are you maybe wanting to experiment with?
Yeah. Your first question, it was not difficult. It was just pure, pure joy. So by the time I wrote Instant Karma, I mean, I had written, you know, the full Lunar Chronicles series, the full Renegades trilogy, and Heartless. And to then switch into a romantic comedy where it's very focused on these two teenagers falling in love. It's an enemies to lovers story, which is just a trope that I adore.
Me too.
And like nobody dies in this book. There's no big revolution. There's no war. Nobody is trying to like hunt them down and kill them at any point. And so to go from like all of these big sci-fi and fantasy adventure stories into writing this much quieter, simpler story, it was very much just like what I needed creatively at that moment. So it was not difficult. It was so much fun. I had such a blast writing it. And I don't remember what the other question. Oh, what other genres might I want to explore? So I mentioned that I've been working on a murder mystery, which I'm very, very excited about. I also have my first middle grade, which I co-wrote with Joanne Levy. That comes out in October of this year. I have a number of other fairy tale retellings in the works, high fantasy along the lines of Gilded and Cursed.
Yes.
And I have a couple more graphic novels in the works as well.
So lots of irons.
Am I a little busy?
Your fire.
So many irons.
Oh my goodness.
So many irons in the fire. I've got 2 books coming out this year. And right now it's looking like I might have 3 out in 2025 and 3 out in 2026. So there's a lot happening.
That's amazing. I'm congratulations.
Like, clapping over here.
It's been very, productive lately.
That's amazing. So we have on here a question and it feels very relevant right now talking about how many books are coming out, how many you've already done. You have so many characters that you have created and how do you keep them all straight? Do you have a particular character that just stands out to you as a favorite character? So first, favorite character, if you have one. Second, maybe most difficult character to write. And third, how do you keep track of them all?
Okay. I think my favorite character that I have written so far is Jest from Heartless. And why is he my favorite? I don't know. He's everything. He's everything to me. He is charming. He's loyal. He's brave. But also like he has all these random talents. He can do magic tricks and play music instruments and like tell jokes and stories. And I really wanted him to seem like a very magical, impossible character. And I feel like I succeeded to the point where I just am so smitten with him. So he's probably my favorite character to date. Most difficult. Who's been the most difficult character? I mean, a lot of side characters are challenging. But if we're looking at more main characters, maybe Jason from the Lunar Chronicles, because he was a character that really had to be very, very secretive and kind of just kept everything really close to the vest, including from me. It was really hard for me to peel back the layers and figure out what is making this guy tick. Yeah. So he was a challenging one. And then how do I keep them all straight? I don't know. I mean, they become such real people to me that it's like, well, how do you keep all of your friends straight? You just do.
Yes.
I will say that lately I've been thinking I need to create a master document of all of the names that I've used, because of course I remember the names of my main characters. But at some point you have all of these little names from little like side characters and walk-on characters. Yes. And it's getting to a point now where I know I'm going to start repeating names. So that's on my to-do list. I need a master list.
Oh, that totally makes sense. Just as like because I feel like sometimes you just have ideas that run in your subconscious, and sometimes that's like names. And so when they come to your conscious, they kind of still live back there and you're like, oh no, I have like six roses going on here. Like there's too yeah. many. So that totally makes sense.
It turned out I used the name Idonia in Heartless and had completely forgotten about it. I think it's the name of Kath's mother, and you only hear her first name like once, maybe twice. So I'd forgotten that I'd named her that. And then I ended up using it again in Gilded, and readers were like, what's the significance of the name Idonia? And I was like, I don't know, of all the names. Like, it's such an obscure random name. How did I end up using that one twice? But I did.
You're like, there's no meaning. There's no deeper purpose.
Clearly a part of me just likes it. I don't know.
I like the name Idonia.
Yeah.
That's a good name.
That's really unique. So I was like, how'd you find that name?
It probably has some like meaning. And I probably found it on a baby names website that the meaning might mean like mother or something. I don't know.
I named my baby Mother. Like, yeah, even Idonia. No. That's funny. I totally would get that though. Like, what stands out to you in a baby list of names as well? So that makes sense. Yeah.
I'm going to backtrack a smidge. You mentioned your first middle grade title that you're co-authoring with Joanne. Is that her name?
Joanne Levy.
Yeah.
And it's called Let It Glow. Have you ever co-written before? I mean, I know graphic novel. Yeah, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I had not. Well, way, 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 way back when I was writing fan fiction, I co-wrote a story with two other authors. But that was a long time ago. In my professional career, I had not co-written. But Joanne approached me with this idea that I just couldn't say no to. I thought it was so sweet and so genuine and really, really spoke to my heart. So I said yes. And it turned out it was the best decision. We had such a blast writing it. I don't know if I expected there to be like, you know, road bumps or like, what if we have disagreements or arguments or we can't agree? There was none of that. I mean, it was so smooth and we're both just so delighted with it.
I always find it fascinating when authors are able to co-write together. Because I'm just like, how does that work? How does that function? Like, does someone take one character, you take another? And I think there's no right or wrong. Every author we've talked to who has co-written kind of has their own process. And so I'm always just fascinated. I'm like, what worked for you guys in this situation? Were you together, separate, pass it off? Yeah.
So the book is about twin sisters who were separated at birth. And one has been raised in a family that celebrates Christmas, and one has been raised in a family that celebrates Hanukkah. And then they happen to meet each other at a holiday pageant and decide to switch lives. So a little bit of a parent trap thing going on. So we have the two viewpoint characters. So she took one twin and I took the other twin, and we wrote an outline very similar to the outlines that I write. And it's funny because Joanne is actually not an outline writer, but she kind of forced herself to be in order to write this book. And it worked out really well. We had an outline so that we each knew exactly what was going to happen in each of our chapters. And then usually I would write a chapter one day, and then the next day she would read my chapter and write hers. And then the next day I would read her chapter and write mine. And we just went back and forth. And I mean, I think we wrote our first draft in like 3 weeks or something. It was a very, very quick process. Oh, wow.
Oh, that's so wonderful to hear too. Cause I think when it, when it's the right fit, it just works, right?
Like it there's just not, worked.
There's not much tension. And cause we get that question a lot too, just between Alex and I about, being co-founders and co-CEOs of LitJoy. And there was, it's kind of an anomaly we're finding to have partners who can make it work.
Yeah.
And so I'm always fascinated to hear when authors co-write. I'm like, tell me how it went.
Right. How does it work for you? Yeah.
So that's impressive. And Joanne, is it Joanne? I don't know why her name just keeps
going.
Joanne Levy. I'm so sorry. Uh-huh. So you and Joanne, and you work together on your podcast. Is that right?
Yeah. So Joanne is actually, she is an author assistant. And so she has been my assistant for many years. I don't know how many years at this point, but a long time. So we were working together in that capacity for years. And then I started my podcast early 2020, right after COVID hit, and brought her on board right away. And then so she does a lot of the admin stuff kind of behind the scenes. And then she runs our social media platform as well. So we've worked together a lot.
I love that. Tell us just a little bit about your podcast for any of our listeners who didn't know you had one.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. It is called The Happy Writer, and it's a weekly podcast in which I interview mostly other authors, but also sometimes industry professionals, agents, editors. We just had an audiobook narrator on, which was really fun. And we talk about writing and books and the craft and publishing, all kind of aimed at the idea of how can we bring more joy into our writing process.
That's amazing. I mean, it's very, very much in theme with kind of LitJoy, what we do. So I like very much appreciate. Mm-hmm. I think there's just, there is something that we're seeing this resurgence of more people reading and like finding joy in reading and writing. And for all of us who have been there for three decades, we're all welcome. You know, we've been, you know, but especially on social media and with different like outlets of social media, podcasts, things like that, you see just this growing readership, people in general picking up books. So I love that there's podcasts like yours out there that are just creating joy around the subject, because I think stories are so powerful and they ultimately can bring people together. So
yeah,
that's the hope.
No, thank you. No, it's been a lot of fun for me. It's, I mean, it was kind of my answer to, well, to COVID to start with, because that was like not a fun year for a lot of people. But also just historically, you know, there is this stigma about writers, this kind of stereotype that like in order to create art, you have to be depressed or you have to be bitter about the world or you have to be an alcoholic or like whatever it is. There's just like this idea that you can't create art if you're not suffering in some way. And yes, a lot of wonderful art does come out of suffering, and we're not trying to like ignore that fact. But also, writing can be really, really fun and really enjoyable. And a lot of us do this because we get a lot of pleasure out of it and satisfaction out of it. So trying to turn, I don't know, to shine another light on the tale.
Right. Not everyone is Hemingway. So
I'm all, thank
not
goodness.
Everyone wants to be Hemingway.
Right. Yeah. Right. You don't need to be tortured to create art. And so I love that. I love that take on it and that your response to it and in sharing more joy. And so that's pretty amazing.
I know.
Question. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would that place be? And I will give you the caveat that if you want to say you keep your home in Washington and you have a home somewhere else in the world is like a second home, where would that place be?
Okay.
I was like, I don't want to make it move.
Caveat, because that very much is like, I'm pretty happy here.
Yeah.
Like if I wanted to leave, I would have left by now. Yeah. So if I were to have a second home, Italy, it would be. I don't know specifically. I've been to Bologna and Venice. So I have not explored all of Italy, but Bologna, which is like kind of right center, the smack middle of Italy, the most magical place I've ever been to. I love the history. I love the architecture, the art, the wine, the food. I mean, everything about it is just paradise to me. So it would be somewhere in Italy.
Amazing.
One day I'll get to Italy. I know Alex has been. And
I was. If you go back, go to Florence. Florence is the same kind of magical energy. It's like the Renaissance was Florence, right? It was the center of the world during that time. So I'm like, if you go back, go to Florence. It's right near, it's like right near Tuscany. So you're kind of in that middle area, but
yeah,
that's amazing. Italy's a good answer. I'll accept.
I'll accept.
Yes.
She's like, I passed.
She was worried. What about somewhere fictional? Is there somewhere fictional you'd ever want to live? This one's a harder one.
I mean, if most fictional worlds are based around like really bad things happening.
I know,
like,
right?
I always think of the Shire. I'm like,
she's like, to the Shire.
They have the good Shire, food. You know, and actually my brain went to Tolkien and Middle Earth. And I think the Shire is a great answer. Yeah. Do I have to be a hobbit to live in the Shire?
No, you'll just be very tall.
Not that there's anything wrong with being a hobbit, but like, do I? Yeah.
I'll just be a leader.
I mean, Gandalf comes to visit, so.
He can't fit anywhere. So we'll build you a bigger house. Bigger house.
These are fun questions that are just kind of like outside of the writing process in the books. I love learning more about authors. So this is a question I love to ask authors. It's a doozy. It is, if you could sit down to have coffee with any author, living or deceased, who would you choose and why?
It'd have to be Jane Austen.
Yeah. Yes.
And why? Because it's Jane Austen. Like, I know. I think part of it, I love her books. I'm fascinated by her life story. But there's such a big part of me that wants to meet her to see if I'm like her at all. Which I don't know. Does that sound like vain? Like I just want to connect with her in such a deep level and be like, I also want to tell stories about like falling in love and finding your place in the world and about women who are like defying the society's expectations and all of these things. And she was, was she the first? Probably not, but she was certainly one of the first. And I just think she is a remarkable human being and I'd love to meet her.
That's a great answer. I think to me, Jane Austen would be on my very, very, very short list. And I think it would also be remarkable, and maybe she knows wherever she's at, but it'd be remarkable to tell her just how impactful her work was because I think she was ahead of her time, obviously. And usually it's people ahead of their time that paved these paths for others to follow. And so it would be a really remarkable experience to be able to tell her that she is a staple in literature.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously in our lives.
Do you have a favorite Jane Austen book in particular?
Oh, Pride and Prejudice.
Right?
Alex is like, no.
Persuasion also,
I know they're all good.
My favorite, but I am a fan.
Yes. Yeah. It's one of our favorites as well.
Oh, yes. Most definitely.
It was our first special edition.
Yeah. It was the first book that we put to our production, did our own production on.
Yeah.
And we'll send you a copy. Do you have a copy of our book? We'll send you one. We'll do it. Jane Austen.
I love
Great
it.
Answer.
I love Pride and Prejudice. The movies, they're so good.
I know.
I love Sense and Sensibility and Persuasion. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
They're all so good. Sense and Sensibility, I fell in love with that movie first and then read the book and loved it just as much. I'm all, But then Captain Wentworth, I'm like, they're so good.
I know. You just like they wrote love letters and forth. You're a love letter. I know.
Very like appropriate for Valentine's right now.
Yes. Very much so, which kind of brings us to our special edition that we're doing with you. So by the time this episode comes out, we'll have announced it. And so can we speak at all to the details? Litjoy is doing a special edition of Heartless. It is fully annotated and it is signed, I believe. And let's talk just a little bit about the features. So the cover, let's talk a little bit about the cover.
It's going to be, it has a traditional cover with a dust jacket.
Yes.
But they sort of play together. I'm like.
Or a slip case, right? And the slip case
interacts.
So
I'm all.
Yeah, there's moving pieces. So
there's like a lot.
There's a lot going on. As like we get free reign of production and we're like, put it all in. So it'll have illustrated end pages and there's art within the book. There's also a special edge treatment.
It's all tricked out, all the things. So it's going to have lots of beautiful art throughout that Marissa's seen. And
the artwork is gorgeous. I want so a poster of some of these illustrations. Like, they're so pretty.
I'm so glad you like them. Also, the cover, as Kelly mentioned, there is, because it is Heartless and because our main character has something going on with her heart, in case you haven't read the backstory book that it is, you figure out what's going on with the Queen of Hearts. And there is a piece of the heart that comes into play with the artwork and how we have the elements interacting. So it's going to be very special. And I think spoilers and sneak peeks are coming out. If not by now, they will be soon.
Yes. So. Yep. They come out in a week or two.
From when we're recording. Yes.
From today. So they will have come out by the time this is aired, but it's going to be an absolutely beautiful deluxe illustrated edition of this book. Very, very, very excited about this one. It's one of my favorites.
Yes.
Can't wait for everyone to see all the spoilers. And I'm like, we're all like geeking out. We're like, yay.
Yes. I know.
Thank you.
No, I mean, I will admit there have been a lot of special editions made of my books over the years. Nothing has been like this before. And I was not really familiar with Lit Joy. And so like when you guys approached me and wanted to do Heartless, yeah, sure, go ahead. And I had no idea what you were planning. And then to start seeing all of the ideas coming to fruition and realizing like how many special features and all of the unique artwork. It's so cool. It's really, really special.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm excited to send you one. I'm like, when you get it in hand, it's kind of this magical experience. So
I'm like, I want a picture of you hugging it.
Yeah.
Since you hug yourself.
Yes, for sure.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I do.
That'd be amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on and for meeting with us and telling us about your writing process, your characters, and it's been a delight to work with you. Thank you, reader, for listening to the Lit Joy podcast. Please make sure to rate and review us so that we can keep doing these really cool episodes.
Yeah. And like a good book, recommend us to your friends.